Reader is Leah Croft. Midland Reporter Telegram, September 30, 2022, Volume 94, Number 146. Dixon, MISD to Get Better Applicants, by Stuart Doreen. Ann Dixon was involved in the last superintendent search for Midland ISD. She was then the interim superintendent for the district, but also participated in the search that brought Angelica Ramsey from California to Midland. Around 24 months later, Midland ISD is conducting another search, and Dixon told the Reporter-Telegram, "This one will be much different. The district is in so much better condition, and that makes it more attractive for candidates to come to a district where there's hope," Dixon said Wednesday. "I think we'll get a lot more experienced candidates than we did before. Dr. Ramsey was an experienced superintendent. We had a few others, but we didn't have a deep pool. I think we will get a lot more talent with experience." She said Midland ISD's academic progress under Ramsey will help. "I think with the direction that the district is going now, it's a good step up for a lot of superintendents." Ann Dixon, MISD Superintendent Search Leader. The district, after the 2018-19 school year, ran into issues with a high number of failing campuses and a lack of higher-performing campuses. When the Texas Education Agency released the grades in August, the results showed that the number of failing campuses went from 9 to 2, while the number of A and B campuses increased from 4 to 13. "Those people, experienced candidates, know where not to go," said Dixon. "I think with the direction that the district is going now, it's a good step up for a lot of superintendents." Dixon said that the board has indicated it doesn't want someone to come in and make changes to what has been set up over the last 18 months. "When you see something that's working and going well, I don't think there will be a lot of changes with the next superintendent. And I think that this board will express that they don't want a lot of changes. They like what's happening." Dixon came at a time when Midland ISD struggled with academics during the pandemic. Her arrival in Midland in the fall 2020 also followed the departure of a superintendent because of the lack of academic progress. "Improvement is not that easy," Dixon said. "People get very complacent, and people get very comfortable with bad sometimes. We have broken that glass ceiling, and we're not happy with that anymore. So I think the improvement can continue." The superintendent search timeline includes advertising for the position and taking applications. However, Dixon echoed the comments of Midland ISD Board President Brian Murray, who previously told the Reporter-Telegram that the next board will review applications. "The hope is for a new superintendent to be in place by January 3. We want to get someone in here quickly," Dixon said. PBPA gathers, discusses what's to come, by Mella McEwen. A bright future awaits the Permian Basin oil and gas industry. Serving as keynote speaker at the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's 60th Annual Meeting Luncheon, Colin Fenton, partner and chief intelligence officer at Veriten, told his audience global demand for fossil fuels will remain strong for decades, if not millennia, to come. "If," he said, "all petroleum liquids demand, whether asphalt or gasoline, by the world's 38th richest economies were completely eliminated, demand would still be bigger in 2050. Removing all demand from the richest economies would only equal about 12 million barrels a day, whereas the emerging world would still be responsible for 62 million barrels a day. That is how important the developing world is," he said. "While it may be true gasoline demand may have peaked as electric vehicles began to make inroads, estimates range from 248,000 barrels a day to 2.73 million barrels a day. there's still enough demand to give very strong support to every business in this room, every business in this basin, Fenton said. Liquefied propane will be important as emerging nations give up firewood to heat their homes or cook for petroleum liquids, usually propane. Liquefied natural gas will also continue to grow in importance, a trend kickstarted by Russia's invasion of Ukraine as the U.S. rushed to export natural gas to European allies to replace Russian natural gas. The richest nations forget how poor the rest of the world is, Fenton said. Billions of people, fellow human beings, have no access to electricity or to oil and gas or the things we take for granted. The reason we've had the economic development we've had the last 150 years is because of you. While he offered good news for the industry, Fenton also warned those in attendance that they must endure a few tough months to get to the better times. He attributed those tough times to record inflation being endured globally and efforts by central banks to curb that inflation by slowing economies. When we get in this environment, it doesn't last a year, Fenton told the gathering. It usually lasts 18 to 24 months. As we go through the next 18 to 24 months, we expect global demand to fall 2.5 million to 3 million barrels. West Texas Intermediate could fall to $65 a barrel or below, certainly a price level to take seriously. If, he said, the market reaches contango, when the futures price is higher than the spot price, and volatility remains at 40% or 50% or 60%, oil prices won't stop at $65. It is true the oil and gas industry is in a bull market, stemming from underinvestment, and is headed for a supercycle. But we have to get through this first. That prediction was premature, Fenton said. The world's population, currently around 8 billion people, need oil and gas, and a large percentage of that population are new oil and gas users, he said. Hydrocarbons are essential for security and economic growth, he said, but strap in for the next few months. Texas leaders address EPA designation, grow fund, and boycotts, by Ben Schaefer. A legislative panel addressed top issues facing the oil and gas industry, including a proposed EPA designation, prohibiting the state from investing in companies that boycott energy companies, and another attempt by State Rep. Tom Craddock to pass the GROW Fund. The legislative panel was part of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's 60th annual meeting on Thursday. The panel includes Craddock, Midland State Representative and the former Speaker of the Texas House, Odessa's Brooks Landgraf, the Chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee, and Phil King, Member of the House State Affairs and Higher Education. Landgraf began by stating that the Permian Basin has achieved great accomplishments and maintained a very good environmental record as the energy production epicenter of North America. The Odessa Republican also stated that the proposed redesignation of the Permian Basin as a non-attainment area by the Environmental Protection Agency is a hot topic within the oil and gas industry and the Environmental Regulation Committee. The EPA defines a non-attainment area as any area that does not meet the national primary or secondary ambient air quality standard set forth by the Clean Air Act. King spoke about his efforts last session in the House State Affairs to prohibit the state from investing in companies that boycott energy companies. It's all surrounded on ESG, Environmental Social Governance score. Basically, if you don't have a good ESG score, then they're limiting your access to capital and business, the Weatherford Republican said. King stated that Texas frequently invests hundreds of millions of dollars or more in different markets, but questioned the motivation to invest Texas dollars into companies and large investment groups that boycott the oil and gas industry. Why do we want to let a city or county invest their dollars in that? He said. he laid out the bill he pioneered last session. If you're not going to be a friend to the Texas economy, we're not going to be a friend to you. We're not going to invest in you, he said. The PBPA audience at the Petroleum Club applauded. Craddock discussed the Permian Basin's production of record tax revenues for the state in recent years and his call for the state to reinvest these dollars back into regions that produce oil and gas. He detailed legislation called the GROW, Generate Reoccurring Oil Wealth, Fund, which passed in the House in previous sessions. The bill reinvests state-generated money from the oil and gas industry back into the Texas counties that produce. Craddock said that next session, political leaders with influence in the field need to hold down the growth of renewables. In closing, all panel members agreed that workers and leaders in the oil and gas industry need to share their stories of success, financial generation, and improvement when it comes to environmental factors during production, any chance they get, and to be proud of the work they do. AAA Texas, Gas Prices Continue to Drop, by Ben Schaefer. The state's gas price average dropped for the 15th consecutive week, according to AAA. The organization reported a 4-cent decline, which was 1 cent higher than the decline in Midland. Averages reported this week include 315 in Midland, 311 in Odessa, and 311 across the state. Texans are paying 67 cents less than the national average and $1.59 less than the record high state average reported in June, $4.70. The national average saw an increase due to higher regional prices on the West Coast and in the Midwest, AAA reported. Last week, Texans were paying the fourth lowest prices for gas. Now, the state has the third lowest gas prices in the U.S. AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster spoke about Hurricane Ian in relation to gas prices, stating, Hurricane Ian's track is not expected to increase pump prices in our area due to the monster storm's path impacting the eastern side of the Gulf. The report also stated that the concerns about inflation and economic slowdown are keeping oil prices lower compared to where they were over the summer. Around West Texas, prices continued to drop everywhere but Abilene, where a 2-cent increase was reported. The price there increased to $3.10. San Angelo drivers are now paying the lowest gas prices statewide at $2.96, a 1-cent increase from a week ago. The average in Lubbock dropped 4 cents to $3.14. Amarillo again reported the highest average in the region and state, $3.33. The price in Amarillo fell by 7 cents. In Midland, the average this week is $1.37 less than the record set in June, but also 20 cents higher than 1 year ago. The lowest price for a gallon of gas in Midland on Thursday, according to TexasGasPrices.com, was $2.91. MISD investigates 3 Burnett staff members for corporal punishment, by Mercedes Cordero. Midland ISD announced Thursday that 3 Burnett Elementary School staff members have been placed on administrative leave. According to a press release from the district, the staff members were placed on administrative leave following allegations of corporal punishment. MISD officials became aware of the allegations late Tuesday night and immediately launched investigations, which led to the staff members being placed on leave Wednesday. The alleged behavior is unacceptable and has no place in our school system, the district said in a statement. Midland ISD is committed to fully investigating the allegations and aiding investigation by relevant authorities. The district sent the Reporter-Telegram the following as its stance on corporal punishment. The board prohibits the use of corporal punishment in the district. Students shall not be spanked, paddled, or subjected to other physical force as a means of discipline for violations of the Student Code of Conduct. The district stated that the language is from Board Policy FO Local, which can be found at pol.tasb.org/policy-online/policy-D-key=886-FO. The staff members will remain on leave until investigations are concluded. Burnett Elementary is located in Southwest Midland. MPD searches for woman who assaulted Walmart employee, by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland Police Department is searching for a woman who assaulted a Walmart employee. On September 18, the suspect assaulted a Walmart asset protection employee after being confronted, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. The suspect left the store in a red 2014 Dodge Ram 1500. The suspect has been connected to other thefts in the area, according to Midland Crime Stoppers. If a person has any information on the suspect and it leads to an arrest, they will be eligible for a cash reward. Call Midland Crime Stoppers at 694-TIPS or download the Crime Stoppers app, P3 Tips, and submit an anonymous mobile tip. No caller ID is ever used, and those providing information will remain anonymous. Reference MPD case number 220-918-032. Officials urge oil industry to be proactive, by Mela McEwen. A Texas regulator and New Mexico legislator sought to galvanize members of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association to action amid what PBPA President Ben Shepard said was an unprecedented number of issues facing the industry. At the kickoff breakfast for the PBPA's 60th annual meeting, Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright urged members to be proactive rather than reactive. "We need to set the path and not let government set the path as it has been doing," he told the audience. Noting that he is from South Texas, where deer hunting is extremely popular, Wright likened the industry to that prize buck that walks away from the herd and forces hunters to put it in their sights. He compared the criticism the industry receives over emissions and other environmental issues to being in that hunter's sights. "To not get shot, that buck needs to get back to the herd," he said, explaining that Texas should work with other producing states to set paths forward on issues. "The states need to work together to plan and strategize what the future will look like. That way," he said, "regulators will see the industry as addressing issues and no further regulations are needed." Wright listed several issues that could have an economic impact, particularly for smaller operators, among them having to install new equipment to address flaring. Recently, the commission had to impose regulations that reduced or shut down injection activity to address seismicity, which also had an economic impact, he added. "New rules regarding the weatherization of facilities could also have an impact," he said. "We can't just complain," Wright said. "We have to offer solutions. It's also a process of educating the public, regulators, and legislators about what the industry is doing to address environmental concerns and just how it benefits the public and the economy. The industry is not always appreciated," said State Senator Stuart Engel of New Mexico's District 27. "Your industry is such a huge part of New Mexico," he told the audience, adding that the nearly $26 billion in the state's permanent fund came primarily from oil and gas operations. "And with 82% of the state's production coming from state-owned lands, that's really beneficial to us." Engel predicted that the New Mexico House may sport a slightly different complexion, as some conservative candidates are expected to win their races. He vowed that any harmful bills from the House will be stopped by the state Senate. He also told members that the state's budget surplus is forecast to be between $3 billion and $4 billion as the state treasury benefits from a thriving oil and gas industry, Everything good in New Mexico comes from you, he said. Pro-energy candidates in New Mexico can help state in turmoil, by Ben Schaefer. Members of the New Mexico House of Representatives spoke about changing New Mexico, its viewpoint of the oil and gas industry, and the impact of upcoming elections during a panel session at the Permian Basin Petroleum Association's 60th annual meeting. Jim Townsend, House Minority Leader, began by giving his thoughts on the upcoming state elections. I think the temperature in New Mexico is changing, Townsend said. I think the temperature in New Mexico is like a lot of the U.S. today, and that is, it's in turmoil. Member of the House Commerce and Economic Development Committee, Rebecca Dow, stated that it's the first time in a long time that New Mexicans can elect pro-energy candidates to a state office. Townsend stated that the New Mexico House is going from mostly Democrat to now being called a toss-up. Greg Nybert, a member of the House Government, Elections and Indian Affairs Committee, commented on the Green Amendment and its relation to New Mexican and West Texan industry. It has basically created a constitutional right to clean water and clean air. Beyond that, it gives citizens a private cause of action against people that they believe are infringing on their right to clean water and clean air, he said. He said the legislation places a target on the backs of vital industries in New Mexico and West Texas. The people that are promoting this, they don't want fossil fuels to be produced, even though 45% of our budget is dependent on fossil fuels, he said. He said this will have a huge effect on the oil, gas, and energy industries. This amendment will have dire consequences on our state if the people of New Mexico pass it, he said. Larry Scott, a member of the House Energy, Environment, and Natural Resources Committee, spoke on the Energy Transition Act, which was passed in 2019. He said the legislation was created after a University of New Mexico report having to do with the oil and gas industry. The report stated, according to Scott, that the upside potential for job creation was 8,530 with a renewable energy economy. To get there, the oil and gas industry would have to sacrifice 130,000 high-paying jobs. It just made no sense, Scott said. Scott called the industry magnificent and provides funding for virtually 100% of the school system. He added that the cost for the piece of legislation far outweigh the benefits and will make New Mexicans poor. Dow stressed the importance for New Mexican voters and implored the West Texas audience to tell people they know to vote. Townsend added that it is vital for members of the oil and gas industry to vote for political leaders that represent their industry. The panel members thanked the PBPA for its support that allows them to be better informed on oil and gas-related issues as they head into election time. Obituaries. Christy Lynn Meeker Keir. Christy Lynn Meeker Keir, 65, Midland, Texas, passed away September 23, 2022. She was born February 8, 1957, in Des Moines, Iowa, raised in Cedar Rapids, and later lived in Summit County, Colorado, Maryland's Eastern Shore, Phoenix, Arizona, Inglewood, New Jersey, Taos, New Mexico, and Midland, Texas, where she resided for the past 5 years. She is survived by her husband, John Herbert Keir, of Midland, Texas, mother Edith Ormond Meeker, and brother Randy Meeker, both of Madrid, Iowa, and numerous cousins, nieces, and nephews, and friends whom she loved dearly. She is preceded in death by her father, William Meeker, and aunt, Donna DeFord. Memorial service will be held Monday, October 3, 2022, at 11 a.m. in the chapel of First Baptist Church of Midland, Texas. The family would like to express their gratitude toward the cardiac and nursing staff at Midland Memorial Hospital, the kind people of First Baptist Church of Midland, and the numerous friends and well-wishers who have reached out to them. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Chris's favorite ministry, Turning Point, www.davidjeremiah.org. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Marilee Runyon. Marilee Runyon passed on to her heavenly home on September 28, 2022. Marilee was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma on October 5, 1931. She was preceded in death by her brother Earl Hatfield, Jr., and her sister Gloria Hollis, as well as her parents. She is survived by her husband of 66 years, Ed Runyon, her daughters Lori Kidwell and Lee Ann Runyon, her son Edward Runyon, 6 grandchildren, and 4 great-grandchildren. The family would like to give a special thanks to Yolanda Jimenez and her family for dedicating so much time and love to the care of Marilee. Yolanda and Marilee had a bond beyond measure, and Yolanda is an angel sent from heaven. We would also like to thank Opal Johnson for taking such great care of Marilee. A thank you to Hospice of Midland is in order for their professionalism and care during the last few weeks of Marilee's life. In lieu of flowers, the family would ask that any memorials or donations be directed to 2 places. As an avid pet lover, Marilee would appreciate directing any memorials to Lone Star Sanctuary for Animals or Hospice of Midland for the amazing care. Arrangements were under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, September 30th, 2022. Murray appeals to parents to talk to kids. Threats cannot be tolerated in today's society, he says. Continuing threats in Ector County ISD schools prompted Superintendent Scott Murray to appeal to parents to remind their children that if they are confronted during the day or feel concerned, that they should reach out to an adult on campus for safety. Quote, "We will continue to work on this. It is a concern that we have with the behavior of our children. Our schools will have to be safe places for students and adults, and we will continue to work diligently to ensure that every single day, every child is safe in our learning environments. But we need the assistance of our parents to help us do that. We have to continue to educate our students and children in how to respond appropriately to threats or intimidation, or just when they feel angry or upset. Some of our kids are obviously not equipped for the right way to address a situation," end quote, Murray said during his Wednesday media call. He added that violence is not the way to solve problems, whether that is assaulting someone, using words that are violent, or threatening someone. Quote, "From the age of 3, when we have children entering school, all the way up through seniors in high school, the teachers, our administrators, our counselors, no one in our system teaches our children to be violent. Instead, we teach children how to use our words to solve problems, how to use our actions that create peaceful environments and opportunities for civilized human beings, whether it's 3-year-olds, 10-year-olds, whatever the age may be, to engage in deep and meaningful conversation," end quote, Murray said. Quote, "We will continue to do that. We recognize that some of our students come from a pandemic situation in which isolation has exposed them to other ways of solving their problems. Perhaps they spend a lot of time playing violent internet games, or they've experienced some threatening behaviors on social media. They've learned behaviors by watching television or movies that are not age appropriate. But our kids are exposed, some of them, to some ways of solving problems that are not ways that we solve problems," end quote, Murray said. He noted that jail is no place for children. 5 years ago, if a teacher or student heard someone making a threat like, quote, "I'm going to shoot you or harm you in some way," end quote, they may have just told that person to be quiet and not to say that again. Quote, "But in today's society, we report those incidents, so we have many more kids, many more reports of potential violent behavior or violent words being shared with adults. And as adults, we now take a different kind of action. We report those incidents to law enforcement, and unfortunately, we've had elementary students spend multiple nights in jail simply because they used words that were inappropriate," end quote, Murray said. Over the last week, he said, principals and teachers have spent an, quote, inordinate amount of time, end quote, reminding children about appropriate behaviors and using appropriate words on campus. Quote, we've communicated with all of our families to do the same thing, and I continue to encourage our parents to engage in conversations. By working together with moms and dads and those that care for our children, we can be healthy role models for them and show them how to handle these feelings that they're having right now, which are certainly challenging, end quote, he added. If parents see something dangerous, 911 is always the first response, Marie said. Dispatchers will make sure the call goes to the right agency. Law enforcement agencies like the Odessa Police Department, Ector County Sheriff's Office, and Texas Department of Public Safety handle responses to off-campus incidents. ECISD police are responsible for on-campus incidents, Murray said. Asked about students who agree to fight, Murray said the proactive side is working with students so that when conflict arises, they know how to solve them. Quote, we all have conflicts with others. Violence is not the way that we solve conflicts, and we have to educate and be role models to our children so they can see that violence is not the way that we solve problems. We have to teach our children to do that. We would never want two kids to agree to get into any type of physical violent confrontation. We would want to talk to those kids and help them work through their differences through conversation, end quote, Murray said. On a separate item, Murray said ECISD has two new partnerships with Amazon and the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. Murray said Amazon has donated $100,000 to target students interested in computer science. Quote, we have that as a growing industry, not only within our own area, but across the state and nation. We have an opportunity to develop students starting at the middle school and high school level. We are deeply appreciative of Amazon for this contribution so that we can build the next generation of computer scientists in ECISD, end quote, Murray said. Quote, the second contribution that we have received is a $1 million donation from the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. They are also supporting computer science, but expanding it to STEM careers, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. This particular investment is focused on our elementary schools. The 28 elementaries in ECISD will receive a brand new STEM lab, thanks to the investment from the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation, end quote, Murray said. Today, there will be a ribbon-cutting ceremony to open the doors on the first of 28 STEM labs at 8:30 a.m. at Pease Elementary School. On broadband, Murray asked Ector County commissioners to chip in to get federal funding for more widespread internet access. There are areas of the county that don't have access to internet, or it is expensive and poor quality. Quote, I feel that there are many residents and certainly leaders in our community that know and understand the importance of having all of our residents, north, south, east, and west, having access to high-quality, affordable broadband. That is something that some of our residents have today, but not something that all residents have, and all residents are deserving of that opportunity, end quote, Murray said. Quote, I was very appreciative of the county commissioners for placing that on the agenda and engaging in the conversation. Several of them asked really good questions, and you could certainly tell that there is some interest and a clear understanding of the need, end quote, for this type of infrastructure investment, Murray said. He added that the county is really one of four areas in Texas that is leading the way in broadband. The Connector Task Force consists of 26 community leaders. Quote, we've developed a shovel-ready plan, so we are ready to spend the money. That plan would provide high-speed, affordable broadband to every resident and business within Ector County, end quote, Murray said. The federal government will provide 75% of the cost, and the community will have to come up with 25%. Quote, this is one-time money, end quote, Murray said. Quote, we'll never have this opportunity again. So now is the time for our community to act and to take advantage of these dollars, end quote. Locally, he said, the plan calls for $89 million. Quote, we're looking for a little over $20 million locally that we would need to raise, end quote, Murray said. There was no information on whether the teacher who was attacked at Bowie Middle School over a cell phone was back at work at school. There have been rumors that she could not get workers' compensation. Quote, I will tell you there is law in the state of Texas that protects any staff member of a school system from an assault from a student, end quote, Murray said. Quote, we actually have access to a special kind of leave as school district employees. That leave is up to 2 years that school employees have should an employee be assaulted by a student. Gramage pleads guilty in death of baby son. An Odessa man who was arrested in July in the death of his 7-month-old son pleaded guilty to murder and injury to a child Thursday and was sentenced to life in prison, plus a consecutive 20-year term. Cameron Gamage, 23, will have to serve at least 40 years in prison before becoming eligible for parole, said Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan. Gamage entered the plea agreement before he was even arraigned on the charges. In exchange for his guilty plea, Gallivan agreed to drop a witness tampering charge in the case and a sexual assault of a child charge that was pending in Andrews County. According to family members, Gamage was charged for having sex with his son's mother, 18-year-old Layla Pearson, while she was under the age of consent. Quote, one reason the case was resolved so fast is the defendant quickly took responsibility for his actions, end quote, Gallivan said. Gamage initially told police he dropped his son, Logan, while tossing him in the air, but he later admitted to strangling him as well, Gallivan said. His indictment alleged both acts. Gallivan said there were several mitigating circumstances in the case that made it unlikely a jury would have imposed the death penalty for Gamage, including a low IQ. The prosecutor also said he would have had to prove Gamage was a future danger to society. Pearson was indicted on September 19th on two counts of injury to a child. According to the indictment, she's accused of placing her son, quote, in an environment which allowed, end quote, Gamage to commit the acts that led to the child's death, and she failed to seek medical treatment for the boy's head injuries. Originally arrested July 12th, she was released from jail July 14th after posting a bond of $100,000. She was rearrested Monday, and she remained in custody as of Thursday on bonds totaling $200,000. Odessa police received a 911 call about a baby who wasn't breathing at 12:52 p.m. July 12th from the Brady Station Apartments in the 4200 block of East 52nd Street. When they arrived, they found the baby, who would have turned 8 months old on July 23rd, deceased with heavy bruising and swelling to the left side of his face and head and smaller bruises along the top of his cranium. An Odessa Police Department report indicates Pearson told officers she fed her son around 5 a.m. July 12th and woke up around noon to find him not breathing. Pearson told authorities that when she asked Gamage about the baby's injuries, he told her Logan had, quote, probably hit his head on a hard part of the crib, end quote, the report stated. She assumed his fussiness over the next few days was due to teething. Judge Dan Whalen of the 70th Ector County District Court sentenced Gamage and will preside over Pearson's case as well. Midland Elementary staff members placed on leave. Midland. Three staff members have been placed on administrative leave from Burnett Elementary School following allegations of corporal punishment, according to CBS 7. Midland ISD says they learned of the allegations late Tuesday night and immediately launched investigations, which led to the staff members being placed on leave Wednesday, the station reported. The staff members will remain on leave until investigations are concluded. In a release, MISD states the alleged behavior is unacceptable and has no place in our school system. FAFSA/TASFA Night. University of Texas Permian Basin will host FAFSA/TASFA Night October 4th in room 2130 of the Mesa Building. Check-in starts at 5:30 p.m. and the event runs from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Those attending should bring their IRS tax returns or tax transcripts and W-2s for the year 2021. Dependent students will need to bring parent tax documents as well. Odessa Church hosts two-day series. Seven speakers from churches in San Angelo, Lubbock, Midland, and Odessa will discuss various aspects of, quote, the law of the Lord, end quote, Saturday and Sunday at Parkview Church of Christ at County Road West and Park Boulevard. Host Minister Denny Wilson said the series was organized according to the ideas in Psalm 19, 7 through 11. Adam Orr of Westside Church of Christ in Midland will begin at 10 a.m. Saturday with, quote, the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul, end quote, followed by Ryan Smithy from the 9th and Main Church in San Angelo at 11 a.m. on, quote, the testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple, end quote. Lunch will be served each day. Here is the rest of the schedule. Quote, the statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart, end quote. Mike Bonner, 9th and Main, 1:30 p.m. Saturday. Quote, the commandments of the Lord are pure, enlightening the eyes, end quote. Steve Horton, West Side, 2:30 p.m. Saturday. Quote, the fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever, end quote. Wilson, 9:30 a.m. Sunday. Quote, the judgments of the Lord are true, righteous altogether, end quote. Anthony Flunder, Milwaukee Avenue Church, Lubbock, 10:30 a.m. Sunday. Quote, by them we are warned and rewarded when we obey, end quote. Royce Williamson, 9th and Main, 1:30 p.m. Sunday. TSUS announces historic investment in Middle Rio Grande region. Eagle Pass. The Texas State University System and Sul Ross State University announced on Thursday a $33.1 million investment in new and improved educational facilities in the Middle Rio Grande region, including an estimated $30 million to construct a new multipurpose education building in Eagle Pass as the first step toward a comprehensive four-year university. The remaining $3 million would support facility enhancements in Del Rio and Uvalde. Quote, "We are excited to begin the process of creating a four-year university in the Middle Rio Grande region," end quote, DSUS Chancellor Brian McCall stated in the press release. Quote, "I sincerely thank Representative Morales and his colleagues in the legislature for approving the capital project funding that facilitates this historic investment," end quote. The $33.1 million in capital construction assistance was approved by the Texas legislature during the 87th session. Representative Eddie Morales joined TSUS and SRSU leadership during a news conference at the International Center for Trade in Eagle Pass. Morales reinforced the need for additional student enrollment, community support, authorizing legislation, and other resources to create a comprehensive university over the next decade. Quote, "I am grateful and excited for the historic investment the Texas State University System and Sul Ross State University are making in the Middle Rio Grande region, including Eagle Pass, Del Rio, and Uvalde," end quote, Morales stated in the press release. Quote, "The expansion of higher education opportunities in our region will likewise provide for further economic development and growth. For too long, we have seen great young minds from our area leave to attain bachelor's or advanced degrees, never to return," end quote. Quote, "Thanks to the efforts of Chancellor McCall, President Hernandez, and their staffs, our young children and teenagers stand at the precipice of reaping substantial benefits from this commitment and this investment. Rest assured that all this could not have been possible without the hard work of our past and current public officials and leaders who dreamt, championed, and persistently lobbied for a four-year university in our community and never took no for an answer," end quote, Morales stated in the press release. Quote, "This is a tremendous opportunity, and we at Sul Ross State University are committed to providing expanded access to higher education in this region," end quote, Sul Ross State University Interim President Carlos Hernandez stated in the press release. Quote, "We look forward to working with community leaders as we build and launch the foundation for a comprehensive university with its own name, identity, and location leadership," end quote. Earlier this year, TSUS engaged Hanover Research, a leading market research firm, to assess current and future education and workforce needs in the Middle Rio Grande region. Hanover conducted a market and needs assessment of the region and sought input from Sul Ross faculty, staff, and students, as well as community members, local leaders, and employers in Del Rio, Eagle Pass, Uvalde, and surrounding communities. Hanover Research found demand in the region for possible new degree programs in finance, engineering, information science, construction technology, computer information systems, and health-related fields. Spitting image. Ellen Noel opens new exhibition at Presidential Archives. Over the years, portraiture has allowed artists throughout time to express concerns and interests about the human condition. Throughout history, those types of works have been represented through sculpture, painting, photography, and many other creative mediums. Some of those portraits from different mediums are currently on display through December 30th at the Ellen Noel Art Museum in its new exhibition called Spitting Image. The exhibition features portraits from the museum's permanent collection and opened up September 15th. It is the first exhibition at the Ellen Noel Art Museum since it moved to its temporary location at the Presidential Archives next door to the museum. The Presidential Archives, located on the UTPB campus, 4919 East University Boulevard, will be the Ellen Noel's home while the museum's original location undergoes renovation work. Quote, "It has worked out so incredibly well that there's such a lovely synergy between what we do at the Ellen Noel Art Museum and what the Presidential Archives is all about," end quote, Museum Executive Director Sheila Perry said. Quote, "To be honest, being in partnership with UTPB is pretty fantastic. So far, everything is going really well, and I think you're going to see unique things that would not happen if we didn't have this relationship on the go. So it's really exciting. You should be here in the mornings when the kids come through, and it's their first time seeing art. It's good for our community," end quote. The exhibition features portraits that have been stored in the museum's vault and recent acquisitions. The most recent acquisition includes a painting by Henriette Wyeth Hurd with a painting titled, quote, Tommy Lee Moss, end quote, from the late 1970s donated by the estate of Betty Lee Moss on behalf of her children. With presidential portraits lining up the walls at the archives, Ellen Newell Museum curator Daniel Zeiss said it was only fitting that the first exhibition to take place would feature other different types of portraits. Quote, we decided to focus on portraiture, and we borrowed a few pieces from local collectors, but it's mostly pieces from the museum's own collection, end quote, Zeiss said. Quote, we did this because we also have fine arts collection connection, which is why we bring third graders from the school district, and they come in and draw themselves, so it's been really fun. It's been fun to show them these different pieces of artwork and describe what it's like today. Kids are into selfies today, and we show them what it was like before cell phones, end quote. Perry also said the museum wanted to do something that spoke to both their collection and the collection at the Presidential Archives. Quote, portraiture, sometimes people don't understand that when it comes to constructing self-image, it's been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years, end quote, Perry said. Quote, portraits are the selfies of days gone by. You can learn a lot about how people perceive themselves or want to be perceived by looking at them. You can learn a lot about the history of the time that they were painted, or if you're in the 20th century, what people were feeling in them. I think there's a natural synergy with how we find ourselves dealing with our online presence and how social media is playing into our own idea of self. We want to spend time with children so that they realize it's all a construct. Nobody is exactly the person they put themselves out in the world. There's not a lot of difference between the selfie that they take and the portraits on the wall, end quote. One of the important items the museum wants to note is that its regular programs have not stopped because of the renovation. Quote, the thing I would say is to please be assured that programming is normal, end quote, Perry said. Quote, if you go to the website or go to the papers, the things we do for the community, we're not going to stop doing. Like us on Facebook and Instagram, but for sure, what we've done in the past, we will continue to do. All the normal program that we usually do, we're just doing it 500 feet to the east. Even if you come looking for the museum, you're going to see that we're next door. That's what's so great about being here, end quote. Asleep at the wheel to return to WNPAC. Next week, a familiar group will reunite with the West Texas Symphony. Asleep at the Wheel will join the West Texas Symphony live in a concert at 7:30 p.m. October 8th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Tickets for the concert range from $32 to $52, while tickets for students are $8. Tickets can be purchased online at tinyurl.com/TBR96PAE. This will be the third time the symphony will welcome the Texas Legends to the stage. Both groups are celebrating milestone anniversaries, with the symphony celebrating 60 years and Asleep at the Wheel celebrating 50 years. The symphony will accompany the band on many of their top hits. Asleep at the Wheel has received 10 Grammy Awards and represents an important cornerstone of American roots music. 50 years ago, Asleep at the Wheel's Ray Benson wrote in his journal that he wanted to form a band to bring the roots of American pop music into the present. It seemed like an ambitious goal for a 19-year-old, yet Benson has done exactly that. Traversing the globe as an ambassador of Western swing music and introducing its irresistible sound to generation after generation. Although the lineup has changed countless times since its inception, Benson's mission has never wavered. Quote, I'm the reason it's still together, but the reason it's popular is because we've had the greatest singers and players, end quote, Benson said in a press release. Quote, when someone joins the band, I say, learn everything that's ever been done, then put your own stamp on it. I love to hear how they interpret what we do. I'm just a singer and a songwriter and a pretty good guitar player, but my best talent is convincing people to jump on board and play this music, end quote. Even though some of its members and audiences represent a new generation, the far-reaching appeal remains a testament to Benson's initial vision. Quote, how do you keep this music going? End quote, Benson stated in the press release. Quote, well, you've got to have some young people. If young people aren't doing this, then we're just a museum, and I don't want to be a museum, end quote. Forum enters final weekend at MCT. The first thing director Carl Moore wants people to understand before they see a funny thing happen on the way to the Forum is that it's very silly. Quote, that's part of the show's strengths, end quote, Moore said. Quote, I know that it's very silly, and it owns it, end quote. The comedy, which was inspired by the farces of the ancient Roman playwright Plautus, who lived from 254 to 184 BC, has been making audiences laugh at Midland Community Theater for the past month and will approach its final weekend with its last two shows at 7:30 Friday and Saturday. Moore has directed shows at MCT for more than 20 years now and participated in this play twice, once in the 80s and the other in the 90s. This is his first time directing the show. Quote, at Midland Community Theater, our executive director, Tim Jebson, was finding people to direct, and he's been asking me for quite a while. But the thing is, I'll direct whatever show he wants me to direct, end quote, Moore said. Quote, he told me the reason that he wanted me for this particular show is that I have played the lead role in the show twice in the past. He just thought that I'd be perfect for it. Quite frankly, I enjoy doing it, end quote. The show opened September 9th at the Mabee Theater 2. Quote, the show's success is due primarily to the fact that the people in the show auditioned, end quote, Moore said. Quote, once we got the cast, it was like, okay, all I need to do is just make sure they don't get out of hand and just go. They're all doing such a wonderful job. Plus, I have an amazing choreographer that did all the dances for the show. I really have been blessed, end quote. The plot of the show is that Pseudolus schemes to win the heart of a virgin, Philia, for his young master Hero. In exchange, Hero will grant Pseudolus his freedom once and for all. However, things are never as easy as they seem. Chaos ensues with the harebrained schemes, cases of mistaken identity, slamming doors, and convoluted plot twists. Quote, if you're anyone who enjoys storytelling or listens to a lot of stories, you know immediately that they're going to get what they want because it's comedy, end quote, Moore said. Quote, the real thing is what they go through to get there, end quote. Moore said he has enjoyed directing this show. Quote, it's been great fun, end quote, Moore said. Quote, I've really enjoyed the whole process. I would anticipate that I needed to do a particular thing with the show, and lo and behold, the actors were guided by the same thing that guided me. And they were doing it before I got to them about it, so it's been great. It's been great fun, end quote. Moore says reactions from the audiences have been positive. Quote, they really enjoy it, and that's been fun for the actors, and it's been fun for me, end quote, Moore said. Quote, of course, we're in a small theater. It seats about 154. I don't go in and watch the shows every day. In this particular theater, I'd be taking a seat away from somebody. I have a cast that I can thoroughly trust and won't go crazy with it. It's going to be a great show. The audiences are really enjoying it and having a great time with it, end quote. West Texas Jazz Society to host jam session at Flair Taverna. The West Texas Jazz Society will be hosting its quarterly jam session from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday at Flair Taverna, 2701 JBS Parkway. The event is free and open to the public. Jazz lovers who play an instrument or sing are encouraged to come and play. Quote, they're a wonderful partner to have for a lot of music in our community, end quote. West Texas Jazz Society President Eric Baker said. Quote, we provide a small jazz combo and we invite the community to bring their own instruments. There are people who love to play jazz, and this is a great opportunity for them to come up on stage and call a song, and the band will play along with them and give them a chance to shine. We have vocalists. People can come up and sing, end quote. Baker said that the jam session is a great opportunity for younger musicians in the community. Quote, we've been having several high school students and college students from UTPB and Odessa College come out and participate as well, end quote, Baker said. Quote, it's just a really relaxed atmosphere, and even if you don't want to play or sing a song, we have a lot of people who just come and support, end quote. Flair Taverna has been open for about a year now, and Baker said they've been a big part of the jazz community. Quote, from day one, their owner really wanted to have music as a featured part of their business, end quote, Baker said. Quote, I think right now, every Thursday, Friday, and Sunday, they have live music at Flair Taverna. They have blues, jazz, singer-songwriter types, just a really wide collection of musicians that perform there in the bar area, end quote. Musicians featured will include Jimmy Olake on drums and Mark Lowe on bass. On the keyboards will be Dan Ferguson, and Alberto Madrid will play guitar. Baker said they'll have Jordan Holmes on saxophone. Baker himself will be doing the MC duties and playing trumpet as well. Quote, this is always such a fun event because it's really laid back, end quote, Baker said. Quote, it's really relaxed. There's not a lot of difficult prep work that goes into it. All the musicians that come are local. So people just drive up and grab their instrument and come in and make music for a couple of hours. We also use some local professionals who are affiliated with the local jazz society to provide support. For example, if someone wants to play a saxophone as part of the jam session, well, we provide the drum, the bass, the keyboards, the guitar, and things like that. We set up all the other equipment for sound just in case someone else wants to come up and participate, end quote. For those who have never attended one of these events, Baker says people might be surprised by what they listen to when they come out. Quote, if you've never experienced something like this, I encourage you to come out because it really is a lot of fun, end quote, Baker said. Quote, it's really accessible. There are some people who think that jazz music is a little cerebral or distant or a little bit elite. But we want to prove that jazz music is for everyone and that there is something for everyone to enjoy, end quote. Texas Tech School of Music to host an evening of Latin American piano works. Lubbock. Martin Camacho is currently in his first year as the dean of the J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts at Texas Tech University. He'll get to have his Lubbock debut performance with, quote, an evening of Latin and American piano music, end quote, at 7:30 p.m. Monday at Hemley Hall at the School of Music. Camacho comes to Texas Tech having previously served as the dean of the Fane College of Fine Arts at Midwestern State University in Wichita Falls. Quote, this is an amazing opportunity, end quote, Camacho said. Quote, Texas Tech is one of the leading institutions in the arts in both the state and nationally. This institution commands respect and a high tradition. We have thousands of alumni in the arts, theater, and dance and are very proud of the institution. I think just having the opportunity to lead a college and help the faculty and staff into its next stage in history is just a unique opportunity. I couldn't be more excited about it, end quote. Camacho is a renowned pianist and combines his passion for administration with his artistic activities. His free public debut concert Monday will be filled with pieces from his Latin background, and the musical styles include Cuban dance, Argentinian tango, and Mexican danzón. Quote, in this concert, I feel it's a program for all Latin American music, end quote, Camacho said. Quote, I debated what I should play first. One of my passions is Latin American music, which I have devoted a big chunk of my life. I've made it my mission to spread the music throughout the United States and the world in some capacity. I thought that having the signature coming to Texas Tech would be a great opportunity to share my repertoire with the community and staff here and students, end quote. Camacho said the program will begin with a very well-known piece by the Mexican composer Manuel Ponce called, quote, Baleta Mexicana, end quote. Quote, it's one of the staple pieces for Mexican music for a piano repertoire, end quote, Camacho said. That will then follow with a piece called, quote, The Cuban Dances by Mario Ruiz Armengol. Quote, those are neat pieces because they incorporate lots of different music styles ranging from jazz to classical Mexican music, end quote, Camacho said. Quote, it's all mixed up, and it's really fun. It has a little bit of everything for everyone. Those are really nice and fun, end quote. The event will feature special guests, including Latin Grammy-nominated pianist Adonis Gonzalez and Fabio Augustinus, assistant professor of practices in commercial music and jazz studies. Gonzalez, quote, is a Cuban origin pianist that I've known for the last 33 years or so, end quote, Camacho said. Quote, we're going to play a tango for two pianos called La Grande Tango by Astor Piazzolla, end quote. They will close out the concert with a piece by Mexican composer Arturo Marquez called Danzón No. 2. Quote, that's one of his most famous pieces, end quote, Camacho said. Quote, he's become a well-known composer around concert halls in the world. That is a signature orchestral piece. This is a two-piano format of it, end quote. Augustinus will provide percussion to the last piece. Quote, he's a fantastic drummer, end quote, Camacho said,